Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Well, rarely do we have two cooking shows in the space of a week, but here we are, and a great one we have in store for you today. The number to call, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Executive chef Dominique Brialy is a native of France, where he studied the culinary arts in Provence. He was the sous chef at the Paris Hilton, or the Hilton in Paris, if you, you know, before moving to the capital region, where he landed at the Epicurean after meeting its owner and our other guest today, Claire Pogue. Dominique is known for his unique spin on French classics and has won all sorts of awards, including the title of Albany Iron Chef in 2004 and a gold medal from the American Culinary Association. Claire Pogue is a native of Montreal. Her culinary career has taken her from the kitchens of acclaimed New York City caterer Glorious Foods to several luxury restaurants and resorts in Vail, Colorado, to the Capital Region, where she started the Epicurean as a bakery and cafe in Pittstown, New York, almost a decade ago. So nice to have you both here. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you for having us.
Well, I don't know if you are familiar with the format of the program, but we will take calls and we will answer questions on food and cooking. And my question for you both: what do the French know about cooking that Americans fail to comprehend?
You want me to tackle that one?
Yes.
I think the French approach food from a social point of view. It's really part of the culture, so you can't really take French food away from the culture. Mm. And often people are surprised that the French people will stay at the dinner table or the lunch table for hours on, going courses after courses. It's an intricate part of the life.
It's a little different than we have here.
Here's what we say. The difference between American and French: the American eat to live, and the French live to eat.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, that's very good indeed. By the way, I should mention that you can post comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, WAMC.org/VoxPop. You can also comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC radio, or you can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. You can even email us, voxpop@WAMC.org, but we'd love to take your calls. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. So, Dominique, you are an Iron Chef. What does that mean?
It means I do couple competition.
Okay, and what kind of a competition?
Competition between all the chefs of this era. Mm-hmm. And so, otherwise, with basket or special item.
Yeah.
You have to cook with.
And you don't know in advance what you have to do?
No, we don't know. That is a mysterious basket. So at this point, yes, we don't know mm-hmm. what's going on. So we have to improvise a recipe or main course or appetizer, depends what is the role of this competition. Mm-hmm. So I do couple competition from around here too. Going on this competition and know by advance what you will do.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a little bit easier because you can
plan
if
ahead.
You want, yes, practice at your home if you have time.
Sure.
That's pretty much it.
Okay. Well, let's go to the phones at 800-348-2551. And Sarah in Sheffield, you're first.
Hello, how are you?
Hello, welcome.
I have a question about seafood. I recently saw on a cooking show on PBS how to steam mussels in a nice garlicky broth and serve it with a crusty bread. And I thought my husband would love that for Christmas, but I didn't know if it was okay to buy mussels in the end of December.
Yes.
Absolutely. Mussels, if you buy them from a good source, they're always they're good pretty much throughout the year now. Just when you buy the mussel, make sure that you don't put them in a closed bag, because you'll suffocate uh-huh. them, and keep them on ice as long as possible before you serve them. And when you before you serve them, make them you wash them in cold water several times to get all the scent out of it. And sometimes you see like a little seaweed coming out of the shell, and we call that the beard. You want to pull with that with a little paring knife to cut it off, so that
right.
when you do your mussels, you don't have that. But it's delicious, okay. and it just takes a few minutes to do.
Wonderful. So it's okay to buy that this time of year.
Absolutely.
Great. Thank you so much.
Sarah, thank you very much. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Over to Charles in Fishkill. Charles, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about boiling water and pasta. Seems, you know, silly to me, but the last several times I've made dried pasta, I get the water boiling in a large pot and lightly salted, and I put the pasta into the boiling water, and the water then sort of rises, bubbles and rises, and comes over the edge of the pot onto the stove, puts the flame out. And I wonder what I'm doing wrong. It seems like such a simple thing, but this has happened several times, and I'm mystified as to what I'm doing.
So, first of all, you put too much water on your pot.
Too much water in the pot?
Yes.
Okay.
And so you have to do like, usually if we don't know too much about the quantity, we can go with, for pasta, 1 cup for 2 cup of water. So one
okay.
cup of pasta, 2 cup of water. A little bit salt, of course, and also you can put a little bit oil.
Yes.
And let them cook. And at this point, if you really don't have enough water, you can still add a little water you boiled on the side.
Okay.
Also, actually, when the pasta starts boiling again, it's not unusual that you have to reduce the heat a little bit. So you
right.
keep a constant boil without having the water rise in your pot. And especially if you have a powerful gas stove, you know, you will see that happens much faster than an electrical stove. And you have the problem of putting out the flame, like you
right.
said.
Right. Well, I was just, my understanding was more water for boiling dried pasta so that it agitates itself in the water that's boiling was better than less water. Is that not right?
Different people do different things.
Right.
I mean, we're French. We're not the expert on pasta. But when I cook pasta, and I'll tell you what, my son, all he wants to eat, he's 15 years old, is pasta,
yeah.
pasta, pasta.
Uh-huh.
So I cook pasta almost every day, and I have a very powerful gas stove.
Uh-huh.
So once the pasta starts boiling, I keep my eye on it. You kind of hear it rise. It
right.
goes shh. And when the water rises, and so I just lower so that I have a constant bubbling of the water without having it spill all over the place.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your help. I appreciate
Excellent.
It.
Excellent. Thank
welcome.
You.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And I never thought we would take calls on boiling water, but here you go. Scott in Ulster Park. Scott, you're on.
Hi, how you doing? I was wondering, how long will a duck confit last in the refrigerator in the rendered fat? And also, if you have a simple recipe for a cousselet.
So, your duck confit can conserve your duck confit on your fat like a really long time. I have no really date to give you, but is an immersion total on the fat, so the hair doesn't go inside. So it's totally protected, so you will be able to keep really long time. So I will say 1 month, a little bit more.
Oh, okay, a month.
I would
okay.
even go further. I mean, I've kept my duck confit for up to 3 months in the fridge. Depends how you do your recipe. Some of the ingredients you use in the recipe are natural conserving agent. You know how in the old days people salted a lot of their food? Well, when you do duck confit, you're really brining the food, and then you take all the fat that you've rendered and you slowly cook the duck confit, and then you keep it immersed in the fat. It's like in Asia they use curry to preserve the food. Curry, you can keep a curry dish for a month, 2 months in your fridge, and it probably won't move. Because if you have put enough curry, it's a natural preservative. Asking for a recipe for cassoulet.
Yes.
And here I let the chef answer.
So the cassoulet is a kind of a long process, usually a 2 or 3 day process. So it will be like a little bit tough to explain you on a detail. But you can start by soak your bean during 1 day or 1 night. You have to do separately your duck confit. After, you will use your duck confit to cook your bean, And at the end, you will integrate your duck confit. And also, if you add a couple more pieces of meat, like lamb, usually I put merguez or sausage, depends what I find on the market. But it's kind of long process.
The sausage, is that critical? That's the recipe that I have, and it was a French sausage that I have to make myself.
You don't have to make it yourself. There's really good sources to buy the sausages, you know. So you can buy them at the supermarket.
Okay. Thank you.
And look for the area of your supermarket or the market where you shop for more specialty sausages. The preferred sausage that the chef uses is a merguez sausage. If you go online, you can actually order them. There's a big purveyor out of New York that'll ship anywhere in the country that's called D'Artagnan. D apostrophe and A-R-T-A-G-N-A-N. And if you go online, you can find the merguez and you can find all sorts of sausages. And if you sound like you're a bit of a gourmet cook. So you can also find quail and duck and everything else, and they'll just ship it to your door.
Okay. Thank you.
Scott, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Chef Dominique Brialy and Claire Pogue of the Epicurean Bistro and Wine Bar in Latham, New York. They're our guests today, and we're taking your calls at 800-348-2551. Back in a flash with more.
Support for WAMC comes from Healthy Living Market and Cafe, working to support local agriculture with organic products, community outreach, and jobs, open 7 days a week, 8 a.m. to 9 p.m., healthylivingmarket.com. Buttermilk Falls Inn, Milton, a 75-acre Hudson Riverfront resort with lodging, a farm-to-table restaurant and spa, now booking holiday corporate and private parties and more, buttermilkfallsinn.com. Rhinebeck Artishops in Rhinebeck and New Paltz, featuring holiday gifts, stocking stuffers, picture framing, and fine art materials for students, professionals, and the public for over 30 years. RhinebeckArt.com. Woodstock School of Art, offering classes and workshops in drawing, painting, printmaking, sculpture, and more for all levels. Tuition assistance available. WoodstockSchoolOfArt.org. And B'nai Shalom Reformed Congregation, illuminating the 8 nights of Hanukkah with the true story of Hanukkah in 3 theories. Tomorrow, 7:30 p.m. at Professor Java's Colony. 518-482-5283.
Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call and talk show. I'm Ray Graff, 800-348-2551, the number. Joined by Chef Dominique Brialy and Claire Pogue of the Epicurean Bistro and Wine Bar in Latham, New York. And, you know, Christmas time here, when I was growing up, you get a ham, you bake a ham, you have some potatoes. How would you do it?
So, from my part, where I come from, and usually in France, everywhere, we eat turkey, like is our Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
So we eat turkey, same stuff, with bread or no stuff. Usually we eat chestnut with grill, boiled, or bake. For the appetizer will be probably oyster and smoked salmon. And the tradition is like for the dessert is like we eat cake. The name is La Bûche de Noël. So is if we can translate, it will be like the log, imitation log piece of wood, you know.
Mm.
Except is a cake and with all thing like that.
It's delicious.
It sounds really delicious.
And the Bûche de Noël, actually, I think it was Metroland last year asked us for a recipe of the Bûche de Noël that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And we send them the recipe. But it's a very long recipe, and it's a little bit like doing a cassoulet. It takes several days because first you do the cake, on a long sheet pan, because you're going to roll that keg, mm-hmm. and you imbibe it with some a syrup with some, usually we like to put a little alcohol in it.
Yes, that works.
And then we do a buttercream to go on the inside, and then we roll it, and then another type of buttercream on the outside, and then we create all the decoration. Like, we make mushroom that looks like, that are made out of egg whites. We make bark made out of chocolate. We make moss made out of pistachios. So it's a really involved process.
Well, next time you come in, will you bring some of that for me? That's very lovely. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Back to the phones we go. Alex in Millbrook. Alex, you're on.
Hey there. I have a question. I also come from France, and I have a very simple question, which is that I'm used to, obviously, back in France, to great bread, great baguettes, great croissant, great batard, and so on and so forth. And I'm just wondering if it is a question of fabrication or a question of ingredients, that it is much more difficult to get similarly quality bread in the U.S., with some exception, obviously, in the city. It is generally very difficult to get bread of the same caliber.
Well, you sound like you're French to start with.
Yes, yes, indeed. Yes.
So we could answer in French, but nobody else would understand.
That's not a good idea.
So, well, I think it's a combination of things. The flour is very different here. The water also has an influence, and also the oven that you cook the bread in, because in France they have different oven than we have. So there are some companies in New York. There's, I believe, it's called Au Bon Pain, that have imported the flour from France initially to do their bread. And eventually they found people all around the Midwest in the United States to create the flour that they needed. And then there's also imported the stove to make that.
Yeah, thank you very much. I have to say, well, I'm quite familiar with that. And I'm going, I think you mean Pain Quotidien, maybe. But Pain is the chain, but yes. Also I hear that the bacteria, or there's certain particular restrictions on the flour that makes it more difficult to import, because I've tried to find even French flour to do it. It's a mess, and we end up having to try to order it online, and even that is not very good. But it's good to know. Thank you very much.
Alex, thank you very much for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. Larry in Poughkeepsie is up. Hi, Larry.
Hello. I have 2 1/5 pound brisket, and I was wondering what's the most delicious way to prepare it.
Ooh, that's a good question, because I've never cooked brisket,
never
to be honest
brisket.
With you. I've had it at my friends, but that's just not a thing that French people cook. So I'm really sorry. I'm not going to be able to answer that question, honestly.
Chef?
Me, same as well.
Wow.
I don't cook really this type of thing, but I'm thinking on internet you will find like a lot of different recipe, because everyone have probably a style to cook brisket. So sorry, I cannot help you neither.
Wow, congratulations, Larry. You stumped the band. Well done.
Can I ask why brisket is not a popular or all-known thing to cook in France?
Actually, in France, all the cuts of meats are totally different than the U.S. And today, the U.S. has some cuts of meats that we have. But I was so confused when I first moved here. I couldn't figure it out. And I have a book, actually, that has, for instance, the animal. Let's say we take the cow. And they show all the cuts of meat that the French have and all the cuts of meat that the American have. And you could kind of look at the animal and go, oh, wow, they don't cut it, the same way. So, I think it's from that fact that we don't really are not, it's not a thing that we would look for to do brisket. We might take a piece of meat and braise it. That's what we would do as French people. We take the least expensive cuts of meat, for example. Those are the ones that are the less tender if you just cook them by themselves. And then we braise them through a process. We first sear them, and then we braise them, which means we cook them covered in the liquid for hours on. Mm. And then it breaks down the fibers of the meat and becomes super tender. That would be the closest thing that we have to brisket, is a bœuf braisé, which is braised beef. And we would, I'm not even sure what the name of the cut is in the supermarket, because I do it just a few times a year. We don't do that in the restaurant. But I think it's called, it's like a really, it looks like a big slab of meat. And I can't, I'm sorry, wow. I'm having a brain freeze here.
Well, Larry, thanks for the call. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much.
Bye now. So the cuts of meat are just named different things, or they're actually completely different styles of cut or cut from different parts? Explain this to me. This is news.
Well, for example, we have the bavette is something that we really like in France, and that's something that we cook a lot at the bistro because it's a very, very tasty steak. It's more chewy. It's not like a filet mignon, but for us, something tastier is that's what we're looking for, the flavor versus, you know, when you have a filet mignon, we'll cover that with a pepper sauce because that doesn't have a lot of flavor, where you would have bavette. And when we first were talking to our purveyor, I actually had to make a picture of that book that I have to show them. And the book is La Varenne Pratique. I actually bought it on the internet through Amazon.com. La Varenne is a V-A-R-E-N-N-E-S. It's a well-known school, cooking school in Paris. And the book was written by Anne Whelan. And they show every animal from the French perspective and the American perspective. And basically what we do is we talk with our purveyor and try and come up with the cuts of meat that are the most, you know,
authentic.
Authentic, or, you know, it will bring us several times a year new cuts of meats, and we experiment with them to see, you know, what we can do with them. And sometimes, you know, it's not so much of a success, and sometimes it's beyond, you know, our expectation. For example, we do a pork ribeye that just melts in your mouth. That is fantastic. I'm not a big fan of pork chops because I always think they're a little dry and tough. But if you ever find pork ribeye, you try that on the grill, it's fantastic.
Our number is 1-800-348-2551. Our guests are executive chef Dominique Brialy and Claire Pogue of the Epicurean Bistro and Wine Bar in Latham, where I guess you have a wine dinner once a month, yes?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Every month we'll feature usually either a different vineyard or a different region. Most of the time when we do the regions, it's the regions of France. So we might have wines from the Bordeaux region one month, wine from the Burgundy region another month. Or we'll do very well-known vineyards. For example, last month we did Gergish Hill Vineyard. And Mr. Gergish is a very interesting winemaker because he was one of the first that challenged the French 25 plus years ago.
Now, where is the Gergish Vineyard?
It's in California.
Okay.
And they produce all the different varietals. So usually when we decide on the winemaker's dinner, we'll first have a selection of their wine. We'll taste the wines, and we'll try to figure out what are the flavors that are coming through in the wine. And from that, then we go back to the stove, and we try to create a food that will highlight the wine versus creating the meal first and getting the wine to match with it. That's what's very particular about our winemaker's dinner.
Mm-hmm. The number to call, 800-348-2551. Let's go to Mark in Springfield. Mark, you're on.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, welcome.
Hey, I had a quick question. I was down in Antibes, south of France, and I was at a restaurant, and I had some phenomenal dish that just changed my life. Veal sweetbreads and foie gras and a bunch of other things, but they had an olive oil there that was from the south of France, and I had taken the name down, and then I lost the piece of paper. And I'm just trying to find out, I found out the French olive oils are far more superior than anything even from Italy. And I'm just trying to find out if there's any a superior olive oil from France you could recommend.
I don't have really the name of the brand, but What I know, yes, of course, we have French oil olive in south of France. All the French Riviera have the olive trees everywhere. So, but I don't remember really the name of the brand.
It's very interesting because this week I was reading an article somewhere in one of the food magazines that I received. And Spain is actually one of the largest producer of olive oil. And there was this person that was writing this article remembered being brought up in Spain and going, I don't remember in my childhood ever having good olive oil like there is today. But of course, they would go to the mill more or less to get their olive oil, and it was a very inexpensive one. A lot of the olive oil that you probably find in the south of France are such small production that they don't make it over here. So it's like finding a needle in a haystack, unless you would go to a very specialized store in New York City. I don't think they would ever make it to Albany. We do, we have found, and all the olive oil we use at the Epicurean is from Ariston, and it's actually an olive oil that comes from Greece. And one of the reason is that it's a very high quality, but also it's in terms of when you look at the price of olive oil, it's priced in a way that it's not prohibitive. And we actually also sell that olive oil at the Epicurean. We have big vats that we put the olive oil in, and we sell it, and that's all we cook with.
Okay.
Okay. Hello?
Go ahead, Mark.
So the thing with the, like, I use two different olive oils, like one for cooking, of course, and then one just for simply just dressing. Like, when you get such a good olive oil, you don't need to use it for cooking. You can use it for just putting it on something, and that's really what I'm looking for, is a really top quality olive oil that I can just put on salad, and that's it.
Absolutely. With salt, pepper. We use different grades of olive oil for cooking versus for using on a salad or just as a topping. And so there are actually great olive oils that come out of California too. And sometimes they will give it some flavor, like they'll we use for our salad dressing at the Epicurean and Meyer's lemon olive oil. And literally, you have to use almost no vinegar to use that olive oil with salad. It has this beautiful fragrance of lemon in it, and it's a very high-quality olive oil.
Excellent. Okay, thank you so much.
Lucero is the brand, Lucero. And you can find it at the Epicurean, too.
1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Let's go to Rick in Hudson. Hi, Rick.
Hey, this one's for Claire.
Okay.
I was listening to the introduction, and my ears stood up when I heard the word glorious food mentioned. And Claire, I just wanted you to know that I spent 12 years there myself, and I tell you, it was an invaluable experience, and maybe you'd like to share with your audience what you gained from your stint at the premier caterer of New York City.
All right.
Wow, that's a good challenge. It's many years ago. It was 1989 when I was there. And
I was here too. I'm sure I bumped into you, Claire. The name sounds very familiar.
It was really funny how I ended up at Glorious Food, actually, because I'm a graduate of McGill University in business in Montreal. But in the late 1980s, I published Canada's premier chef in the United States. His name was Paul Martin. And he was a Frenchman. He was very gregarious. And we traveled all over the U.S. together. And it really gave me the bug of cooking and learning about the chemistry of food. And I was at a point in my life where I was going to move out west, and I thought, you know, I could start my catering company. Let me go to cooking school. And a friend of mine...
You were very young.
Yes, I was very young. I'm still very young, by the way.
All right, all right.
We all were when we were there.
So how? What happened is a friend of mine said, why don't you go to Glorious Food? You know, I know some people there. And I have to say, it was the most invaluable experience. Because when you go to cooking school, they'll show you how to clean a rack of lamb once, say. But when you were at Glorious Food, they would show you once or twice, and they'd say, here, there's 100 rack of lambs for you to cook today. So you could do it in your sleep after that. I remember the day I had to do lobsters. I had to do 500 lobsters, and I was like, oh, my God. You know, I could do that in my sleep. You can put a bandana over my eyes, and I can, you know, cut the lobster for you.
Feel stripping a gun. That's
so
great.
I always say to the young people that want to go in the culinary arts, go work at a really good restaurant first and see if this is what you want to do. And perhaps you can get better training from a restaurant than you can get from, you know, a school sometime. Because you can really get those skills if you work with a really great chef. Where actually the Epicurean has been for a long time, we were a CIA site where we took some of their
interns.
Okay. Yes, so they would come and be with us for 18 weeks and we would put them through a program of training. And what we found is that's what's really missing often when you go to culinary school is the practice. So young people, you know, you could go to Schenectady culinary program and just be as good as the people that go to CIA if you have the opportunity to work side by side with a great chef. And we have some great chef in the capital region.
That's a perfect spot to take a break. We're joined by Chef Dominique Brialy and Claire Pogue of the Epicurean Bistro and Wine Bar in Latham. Mr. Zach, let's take a break. We'll be back with the home stretch at 800-348-2551.
Support for WMC comes from Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York. Sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche. QFCC.com. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Albany, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive displays, and commercial casework for trade shows, events, museums, and corporate interiors. EmpireExhibits.com. Smith College Museum of Art, presenting second Friday, December 13th from 4 to 8 p.m., featuring activities for children and adults and the exhibit River of Gold, Pre-Columbian Treasures from CTO Conti, smith.edu/artmuseum. Current Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York. Legal and consulting services on regulatory issues for life insurance and annuity manufacturers and distributors, currentcompliance.com. And Saratoga Health and Wellness, a fitness facility offering exercise, nutrition, personal training and weight loss programs, saratogahealthandwellness.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551. And in the course of answering the last question, Claire Pogue mentioned the chemistry of cooking. And I thought I would ask Chef Brialy, how much of great cooking is science and how much is art?
I will say 50-50.
50-50. So yes. You really need to know the craft before you can create art.
See, I would say just about anybody can learn the technique. That's what you call science. But not everybody can have the art. And this is something that you feel within yourself. I mean, we will know when we have candidates over that work with us, you know, young people that want to go in the culinary arts, whether they have that art, that chemistry, that they get it. They get it without even knowing it. So in the science, you know, to science is how do you sear? You know, there's a technique for searing. Mm-hmm. You can teach it to anybody. But how do you season or how make a sauce that is just to die for? It's a lot of it. I mean, we don't measure. We just...
It's desire, too, to some extent. It's wanting to do it. It's the same thing with musicians. There are many musicians who have tremendous technique, but they don't have it. It's mm-hmm. the fire in the belly.
Exactly. It's the fire in the belly. And I would say for the savory food, it's more art than science. But for the baking, it's more science than art, except when it comes to the decoration part of the baking.
All right.
Because when you go off a baking recipe, you can really screw things up. So science is very important.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Kathy in Plattsburgh. Kathy, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm having a Christmas party with, it's a very informal, but a spiral ham is going to be the main thing. What are some ideas, some holiday festive kind of sides to go with that?
So for the Christmas party, usually me, I go with something else than a ham. But if I have to do my ham, I will probably accompany this dish with mashed potatoes, with sauteed spinach, probably something like a close than a Thanksgiving dinner. What do you think, Claire? What you will go with?
Well, I think if you want to create a little excitement, you could start with cheese souffle as a little appetizer to start with, you know, your first course. It's a lot of technique, but it's not that difficult to do. And there's some of the stuff you can prep in advance. If you have a good mixer, like KitchenAid,
mm-hmm.
It's very easy to do a souffle. I mean, you basically start with a bechamel base sauce, which is made out of flour and butter, flour, milk. And then you'll add, usually for a good souffle, I'll add Dijon mustard to it, and then a good dose of Parmesan. So I do what's called the base of the souffle. That's the one that involves the egg yolk. So the egg yolks all also added at the end. You can look up a recipe on the internet, I'm sure. You can email me. I can email your recipe. And then the critical part is really the egg white. So you take all your egg whites and you put them in the big mixer and you fluff them up all the way. And then mixing your custard that I call your base of the savory souffle with the white egg whites, and then putting them in ramekins that have been well buttered with breadcrumbs on the edge, because that's what allows your souffle to rise. Mm-hmm. And it takes not a long time to cook in the oven. If you make little ones, it probably take 8 minutes to cook in the oven. But I always do this on Christmas breakfast. And, you know, we have kind of a brunch breakfast, but I make a pretty good size one for each guest. And then I put fresh fruits on the table and jam and breads and, you know, might have ham, a whole bunch of stuff. But when the souffles come out of the oven, if you go to the Facebook Epicurean for our restaurant, you will see probably Christmas morning at the Pogues, and you will see the cheese souffle, and it's always a big, big hit.
Okay. Kathy, thank you very much for the call. All right. Well, this is a great spot to get your contact information. You are on the web, yes?
Yes.
What is the website?
So www.epicurean, EPICUREAN dash.
Yeah, that'll work.
Like you have between a telephone number.
Yeah, we'll call it a dash.
newyork.com.
So it's NY or New York?
NY.
Okay.
Sorry.
Very good. So it's epicurean-ny.com. And there's a link to your Facebook and everything else on
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Let's go back to the phones. Jean in Del Mar. Hi, Jean.
Hi, I know they brought up chestnuts, and I have a question about the chestnuts we made at Thanksgiving. They didn't peel well. Did we not cook them long enough or had enough temperature? They were good, but they just didn't peel well.
And how you did the first process? Did you boil? Did you roast? Did you?
We roasted them. We cut an X on the skin.
Uh-huh. So I will probably say it was not cooked enough.
Okay.
Well, Dominique, would you blanch them before you roast them?
No.
No? Okay.
What I will do, I will take a little knife and do an incision in to let evaporate a little bit the
moisture.
And I will let cook like that on the oven.
Okay, and I just have one more question.
Sure.
There's no substitute for butter, right? There's just no substitute for butter.
It's good for you. Trust me. I eat it every day.
All right, and so you would go along with that. There is
no substitute for butter at all.
Okay.
It's olive oil or butter in my book. There's nothing else.
That's great. Thank you.
All right, Jean, thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551, the telephone number. You know, that's not politically correct anymore to say that just butter is okay. But that's the way we roll in my house as well. Alicia in New York. Where are you calling from? New York City? Alicia?
Hi.
Hello.
I'm so sorry.
Where are you
thank you for taking my call.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Samsonville near Woodstock.
Ah, very good. Well, you are on the air.
I'm wondering if you can recommend an authentic French cookbook or two that would be recipes that wouldn't take all day long, but would just blend, you know, herbs and seasoning perfectly.
Well, I would go with the author Anne Willen. It's Anne, A-N-N, and the last name is W-I-L-A-I-N, and she's published a great number of cookbooks. I have several of them. La Varenne Pratique, the one that I was talking about before, is kind of the basis of French cooking, and it is very pictorial. It's almost like going to cooking school. It's the cookbook that they use at the cooking school in Paris, or the curriculum.
Okay.
But she has a great other cookbook. I think it's, I'm not exactly remember the name of it, but it's something like the Country Cooking of France. And there's lots of great traditional recipes in there, and you will learn a lot. Any one of her books are highly recommended.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you, Alicia.
Very helpful. I look forward to getting into that.
We appreciate the call.
The
number to call is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We're joined by Dominique Brialy from the Epicurean Bistro and Wine Bar in Latham and Claire Pogue from the same establishment. So you have been cooking in this country for how long?
In this country for more or less 9 years.
Hmm. Over that time, has anything from the American way of going about cooking, has it translated into what you do and what you learned, the classical way you learned?
Usually I go with what I learn in France and in school and across all my period of time I was working everywhere. So arriving here, I try to accommodate the both, like a kind of fusion, French and American. Try to incorporate what American people eat a lot or love a lot with my style of kitchen to try to find something new or something like really interesting.
Mm. Are you a tough taskmaster in the kitchen?
I'm not sure I understand.
Yeah, he's a taskmaster.
Yes, tough on the help?
If you worked in French kitchen, you wouldn't be thinking it's so tough, but it's very disciplined and very clean and organized. And the French created the term mise en place. Mise en place means that you have every ingredients ready, every tool that you need, every pot and pan before you start the dinner service or the lunch service. And I would recommend anybody at home to do the same thing. Like, I could throw a dinner party for 10 people and not be stressed about it if I have all my mise en place that's done, meaning I have all my onions chopped and my garlic, whatever. And then when they come, I'll just cook while they're there, and it's no big deal. But if you don't have, if you're not organized, if you're not clean, if you're not methodical, it becomes a lot more of a process. And Dominique is just great at keeping the kitchen really on task and organized, and mise en place is critical.
How many people work in the kitchen at a busy time?
The busy time will be 5, 6, sometimes 7 in a kitchen.
Mm.
And to be really busy.
So as the executive chef, do you just oversee and you have people doing all the different stations?
Yes.
Or are you hands-on? Are you doing some of the work yourself?
I put my hand everywhere, and but I dedicate to everyone the part of the job. So after I just supervise and help where we need to be help.
Hmm. Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. About 5 or 6 minutes left here with Dominique Brialy and Claire Pogue of the Epicurean Bistro and Wine Bar in Latham. An earlier caller mentioned difficulty getting flour that is the same as the flour you would get in France. Is it difficult to get really the ingredients that really lend the proper character to the food? I mean, is the I thought you could get everything in America.
Well, 10 years ago is much more difficult. Today, with the internet, we can get things flown to us from everywhere. And there's a lot of people that have gone to Europe and learned, for example, cheese making or, you know, how to make sausages, the charcuterie and all that. They've come back here, or they're from generations of family that immigrated here and never lost that tradition. Like the Italians, for example, there's a great company out in San Francisco that makes fantastic charcuterie, all the different kinds of salamis.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, with the internet, you could just go online and find just about anything you want.
Well, I guess that's helpful, because I don't understand how the water difference could make any sort of difference in flour. I mean, if you filter water, water is water, right?
Well, you know, the water that you make your coffee with, depending on what kind of water, you can use the same coffee and make it at two different places, and it'll taste totally different. So, yeah, filtration will help get it to the same point so that you have the same things. But you've never noticed, like if you travel around, say, I've noticed that in Mexico, Coca-Cola doesn't taste the same as in America.
That's because of the sugar.
No, I think it has to do with the water, a lot of it. And I've noticed, I bring my own coffee sometime when I go to Mexico, and it doesn't taste the same over there because, one, it's not, you know, the machine they provide you is not the same that I have at home. Mm. The water is not the same. But water is a huge component of it, especially when you think of something like a beverage that's made with water. Or, I mean, in a baguette, it's flour, water. You know, there's not many more ingredients.
So get the few components absolutely right. All right, in the last few minutes, barring a phone call here at 800-348-2551, let's talk about wine. And our Christmas dinners, give me some suggestions. I know nothing of wine. My wife knows the wine. I don't know the wine. Give me some suggestions of things I can bring home for Christmas.
Well, it depends what your wife is planning to cook.
I don't know. I thought she was going to call in, and then she would have let me know. I have no idea what she's going to cook. But some suggestions for, say, a traditional ham Christmas dinner.
Well, I think with a ham, and depending how you do your ham, because the critical thing with the wine is the sauce that you put on the food.
Ah.
So, like, I like to do, if I do a ham, I like to do a honey and orange sauce
mm-hmm.
for the ham. Something that will counterbalance the saltiness of the ham. I remember when I was a little girl, my mother always did it with pineapple back in the day.
Oh, yes. My mother as well. Yes.
But I think then, you know, whether it's orange or pineapple, a Riesling. And you said before you didn't like Riesling.
I'm not a big fan.
But, you know, I'm not a big fan of Riesling, but certain food, I am just crazy about Riesling.
Really?
Yes. And I have one of my favorite is Saalbach Oster.
Mm-hmm.
Riesling, because it has a lot of tropical fruit to it, so I think it goes really well if you have pineapple or orange.
Okay.
But we have a huge list of Riesling on our wine menu because people love Riesling. They go with a lot of food actually, and it's surprising. You might not like a glass of Riesling by itself, but next time, try it before and try it with the meal. Riesling go fantastic with food that have fruits in them, usually a fruit sauce. So if you're doing a duck with a fruit sauce, a Riesling might go very well.
Well, let's get one more call in here. We only have about a minute. Greg in Ghent, I'm sorry, you have about 30 seconds to ask this question, okay?
Okay. My question is just some ideas for preparing a leg of lamb and a possible wine matchings with it.
Okay, very quickly.
So me for the leg, I will probably marinate at head, like a good night, and
okay.
I will roast on my oven.
So you want to marinate with olive oil?
I will add some wine. I will add also a touch of whiskey on it. Some
touch
garlic.
Of whiskey, okay.
Yeah, some garlic, some good oil, olive oil.
What kind of grade oil would you suggest?
I suggest X virgin.
Extra virgin,
yes.
And I'm afraid that's where we'll have to leave it. Greg, thank you for calling in. And a big thank you to our guests today, Chef Dominique Brialy and Claire Pogue of the Epicurean Bistro and Wine Bar in Latham. And the website, once again, if I have this correctly, epicurean-ny.com, yes?
That's correct.
Well,
and thank you for having us.
Thank you for being here. Thanks to Zach, our engineer. Colleen O'Connell answered the phones. And support comes from Woodstock School of Art, offering classes and workshops in drawing, painting, printmaking, sculpture, and more for all levels. Tuition assistance available. WoodstockSchoolOfArt.org. The Beechwood Group of Wells Fargo Advisors, LLC, serving not-for-profits and individual investors. Mary McDonald, financial advisor, and Joseph Steiniger, CFP, financial advisor. TheBeechwoodGroup.com. Dr. Arthur Falk, Albany and Saratoga Springs, facial plastic surgeon and laser specialist focusing on minimally invasive procedures for skin health and facial rejuvenation, aboutfacedoc.com. And the Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butter scratch bakery, caterer and cafe, offering fair trade coffee, blacksheepdeli.com.